entertain a motion to approve the minutes of our November meeting.
Make a motion. I'll second it.
Move in second, and those in favor of ratification, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? I guess they're approval more than anything. Well, the next item is election of officers.
You failed to put that on the list. That's why he's not here.
Well, do you have some feelings about officers?
Lovely how it is.
What do we have here, like the secretary, treasurer, chairman?
Yes.
How are you feeling about you?
I've been able to hold up under the strain. I'm willing to remain. Does Mr. Griffith have any desire to be an officer? Has anyone heard anything?
I haven't heard anything.
Of that nature.
I'm assuming with this being his second meeting, it makes sense for him to not step into one of those roles at this time, but.
Mm-hmm. How you doing, Christy? Where you're at?
I'm in a really tough job.
I'll make a motion to keep the elected officers as is. Is it a 2-year term?
I think it's annual.
Is it annual for 2023?
I'll say it. I guess it's a good idea.
One of you have to second it.
Any further discussion? Those in favor of a unanimous vote to retain the officers that are currently in office, signify by saying aye.
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 And those opposed? That takes care of it. Is there a new chief of staff?
Starting in January. It'll be Dr. Rice.
Well, I guess Dr. Ludwig last opportunity to
yes,
come to the board. Unless he comes a bit later. Well, I haven't been to a staff meeting the last month. I'm not aware of any medical staff issues or major hospital issues. I think we've had a little less hectic workload in the hospital and the ER. It sounds like the clinic saw about 30 more in November compared to the previous year. Overall, I think things are in good order and maintaining a reasonably stable operation. Or, to put it another way, no news is good news. Well, our packet included the leadership reports this month. And I felt that there were no burning issues or concerns that I had in reviewing those. Corey, do you have any good or bad news?
No. Just even keel, just starting.
I saw that we did a little better on the discharge scores on our HCAP questionnaire, which has been a challenge. And most of the complaints were about the facility, rooms cold, no bathroom, windows closed, that it's a temporary situation.
What do you do with the complaints? Do you redirect them at any time?
No, because they don't have any, unless they put their name on there, there's no way to address them. I mean, if there's specific things for specific people or something, we could do something about it. But, you know, a lot of this stuff is so general that we can't even figure out who did it, you know, who wrote it. Just really don't know. We did get the new ones came out, and I got that after we did that, but, and the scores are way better than those. They're a lot better than that.
I received a complaint about the hospital beds being uncomfortable, and I explained that we used to have trouble getting people to go home, and that the beds helped us get them out of there. Those are going to be replaced when we move to the new facilities.
Well, when we can get them. We're having some issues with furniture.
Some. I think the plan was, we were only going to order 3 new beds. A lot of the stuff we're going to bring over, not necessarily replace everything. So, but I got more construction updates, but I'll do that at a later time.
One thing that I noticed is on the incidents and injuries and slips and falls, that seemed to be up quite a bit from last year.
Well, there's a lot more from home health. They've got some patients that they take care of that just like to fall all the time, and there's very little we can do about it. You know, they just educate them on it, but if they're not there all the time, there's really nothing you can do. But there hasn't been a lot of injuries, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
They fall a lot, but have very, you know, little abrasions or skin tears or nothing. So
that's including falls that occurred outside of the facility.
Yeah, we have to document for home health, and hospice doesn't hardly ever have any, but home health does a lot.
And there are 43 home health patients, according to this report.
Yeah, and it's usually just like a couple of people that are calling all the time, usually the same ones.
Well, any other questions for Lori? If none, Brenda, would you like to give us an update?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'd like to spend a few minutes giving you more information on our culture change project.
Okay.
I'll come over there.
You brought some articles. So.
I did, but okay, so first of all, what is culture change? And what it is they kind of been defined as a deinstitutionalizing facilities and making them more resident-directed, resident-focused. So we would create our patterns around their habits instead of them having to come to a meal at a certain time, having to be checked on at certain times at night. So much more individual with hopefully a better outcome. And a more home-like environment. It started in probably the 90s. I don't know if they called it that, but Dr. William Thomas started the Eden Alternative in 1994, and he advocated that residents interact with children, pets, and plants to combat feelings of boredom, loneliness, and helplessness. And then he is also the one that in 2003 came up with the greenhouse model that they have in Sheridan, and kind of that they modeled as the best home here. A more home-like environment, cross-trained staff, so instead of having different departments in dietary, laundry, and nursing, they train the Shabazim, to do all of those cares, as well as the cooking.
And more recently, we've had trainings in avoiding institutional speak. That means kind of like being politically correct with the verbiage we use and make it less institutional. For instance, this would never be a bib. This is a clothing protector. There's no such thing as adult diapers or incontinence briefs. And one that always irritated me was the term feeders for residents who need assistance with dining. And honestly, some of those things are so ingrained, especially the feeders. People actually had to retire. We could not get them to change. They could, and here's some I am having trouble changing myself. Instead of facility, it should be a home or community. Instead of doctor's orders, it's physician recommendations. Instead of there's no behaviors, there are expressions of distress. No such thing as a non-compliant resident. It's a person making their own choices. She chooses not to take the recommended medications. And instead of assessment, it's getting to know you. And instead of admission, it's moving in. In 2019, there was a grant in the works to promote culture change in Wyoming nursing homes and assisted living. This is something we had done in other states, a few other states. And finally, in 2020, the grant was approved. The Wyoming State Survey Agency and CMS Region 8 funded a 3-year civil money penalty reinvestment grant. Civil money penalty is when you get a bad deficiency and you have to pay into the government until you get it corrected. So they used that money to go back to the this coalition, the Wyoming Culture Change Coalition, WCCC. They were to work with 5 nursing homes a year for 3 years, and sign up was voluntary. So you can get special attention for a year at a time, and that would cover 15 nursing homes, which is really pretty good because there's only 38 in the state. And then people who weren't part of that group could still watch monthly webinars and get information. The WCCC committee includes Mountain Pacific Quality Health, Department of Health, the 2 Wyoming Long-Term Care Associations, Ombudsman, Wyoming Nurse Association, University of Wyoming, representatives from various nursing homes and assisted living facilities and other entities, and the facilitator is Carmen Bowman. And then this was just approved in like April of 2020. Well, what else was happening? That's right when COVID was coming. I mean, it was what we were doing to those residents was a further thing from culture change. They couldn't see their families. They were isolated in their rooms. It was voted to postpone the project. And our focus was on, we didn't have enough PPE. We had lack of staffing. It was not a good time. So finally, by April of 21, so it took a year, and they had 5 nursing homes sign up. The rest of us could get the 3 monthly webinars. And Carmen Bowman, she's a facilitator. She has quite a resume. She was a Colorado State Surveyor for 9 years. She was a policy analyst with CMS, where she taught the National CMS Basic Surveyor Training Course, so she taught surveyors. She has a master's degree in healthcare systems and a degree in social work. Co-authored Artifacts of Culture Change Tool, plus several books, taught activity professional training courses, and she's a nationally recognized expert in culture change and a frequently invited speaker at national industry conferences. She knows her stuff. So in April, we hadn't joined this, and in April of this year, we were trying to make some changes, which we were calling, we have a little committee, we call it the Culture Change Committee. We were trying to liberalize diets, trying to get buy-in from the dietary staff, kind of struggling a little bit with it. So in July, we decided to join this WCCC for the expert guidance and accountability. And we got in because somebody else dropped out. So instead of a year, we're actually getting a year and a half. In August, we had our first phone conference with Carmen, and we learned what a great facilitator she is. She gets stuff done. Our first assignment was to, and this is one of the things that made me hesitant to do it, we all had to fill out this 134 questionnaire thing about our current practices. It's kind of a pre-assessment, and it covers if we think we're fully implemented, partially implemented, or not practicing each of these things, and they fall under resident-directed life, being well-known, home environment and accommodations of needs and preferences, leadership, and team engagement. We also were required to help certain residents complete the survey. We had to calculate the staff turnover and completed and submitted some family and resident satisfaction surveys. And honestly, the residents and families graded us higher than we graded ourselves. And then we needed to pick our projects. We were required to pick two, and we were already working with the liberalization of diets. So we had to choose more, and we actually chose a little more than that. We got residents' input from resident council. Some were easy, some were more involved. They're all a work in progress, and some may have to wait for the next budget meeting to try to implement. So some of the easier ones, the residents wanted mailboxes at their doors. They got the mail delivered directly to their doors. And so they voted and chose this one. Well, it's not the one I wanted, but I have to realize it's not about me, so they get to choose. I don't. And then they decided they wanted, in addition to these, they didn't want to get rid of these. They wanted cloth napkins as well, and the color they chose was black. And, okay, I'm not sure how black works with bleach, but we'll see what we can do. And one that I really like is we set out snacks on each hallway for easier access for the residents. And also, residents eat much better if somebody's enjoying the snack with them. So we encourage families to, if you think it'll help, you go ahead and take a cookie and eat with grandma. And we have not had any family members take advantage of that at all, but they really like it, and it's just a social thing, so it does help the residents eat a little better. We did have one resident that a little bit of impulse control issues. She did a whole bunch of snacks one day until she made herself sick, but she hasn't done that again. And then the liberalized diets, here's an example. Instead of having separate diabetic desserts, they just get a smaller portion of the regular dessert. And, you know, they're still expected to be educated in, you know, the right things to eat, the best thing for their health. However, if they choose to eat, you know, mashed potatoes and gravy and cheesecake and nothing else, they are free to do that, just like we are free to do it at home, even if we know it isn't the best choice. The last two projects that we're working on involve changing institutional habits, and one of them, probably my favorite one, is restorative sleep. Some of the negative institutional habits robbing the residents of sleep. Many go to bed right after supper, and they look pretty tired by 6:30. We do bed checks every 2 hours, making sure they're clean, dry, and repositioned, because we've always been taught that's good care. Wake them up for their bedtime and early morning medications. And if they need help eating, the night shift assists, this is our program, the night shift assists residents with eating breakfast from 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m., so like it or not, they were on the early riser list. Now, the alert and oriented residents that can verbalize are much easier to honor their wishes. They can tell us, you know, don't darken my doorstep before 8:30. And I remember asking one of them, well, don't you want us to come in and just check on you at night, you know, make sure you haven't fallen or something? And she said, honey, if I die during the night, I'll still be dead in the morning. as long as we care plan it and they understand what's going on, we can honor all that stuff. And can you imagine, I can't imagine anything more frightening than waking up at 1 a.m. and there's somebody in your face, are you breathing? So I can kind of understand that one. So residents that can't talk are still communicating with us. I remember so many times during the night pulling the covers down off a nice, you know, warm sleeping lady, and she's cold and trying to pull them back up, and we're doing good care. We got to check you. We got to reposition you. And honestly, the industry has really performed well. The mattresses are better than they've ever been. The incontinence products are better than they've ever been. We're still responsible to make sure people don't get skin breakdown, so we still have to watch that, but we don't have to disturb them every 2 hours. And we're trying to make the medication passes so we don't wake them up if they can have something before they go to bed. The problem does come in if they want to sleep late and they get something 3 times a day. Well, you can't, if they get up at 11, you can't get it then and then give it again at lunchtime. So there's some of the hurdles that we're trying to still figure out. And some residents were actually combative, probably because we were disturbing their sleep, because we had a couple of them that it has really improved their mood. And that was the only way they had of expressing their displeasure with us, was beating us up. So the goal is to disturb as little as possible and arrange life at the facility around their schedules. This has been really hard for the CNAs that we have been telling for decades. If you don't do this every 2 hours, you are not providing good care. It's abuse. So it's so hard for them to now have us tell them it's okay. They're going to be okay. You don't have to do it that often. Their sleep is more important. And then kind of along with the being able to sleep longer is more flexible dining times. So if they sleep later, I mean, we could always find them something to eat, but we always have, certain things, breakfast sandwiches and waffles and pancakes, and you can call the kitchen and they'll make a fried egg to order any time. And I just wanted to include something that really got me excited about what was possible. This is not us. This is a nursing home in Afton, Star Valley Nursing Home. This is a menu that the residents get to pick off of. And they even have a room service menu and so much flexibility. I was just excited about what is possible. Any questions?
Do you know why the nursing home dropped out?
I don't know.
Is there a cost to it?
No, it's all covered by this grant.
Didn't you start with one wing to begin with? Not everyone was on this program.
Yeah, we started with, we could kind of, I kind of wanted to focus just on one hall, but it kind of turned into a few residents at each hall. And we, with the sleep study especially, we just try to do a few at a time so it isn't too overwhelming. We actually, it's a 2-week period that we check on them every hour and document if they're sleeping, if they're awake, if they're in an activity, just so we get a better idea of their normal routine.
So what do you call a feeder now?
I call her Sarah.
Who needs help when she eats?
Yeah, who benefits from assistance with dining.
Are there any conflicts with Medicare requirements? Or are we having to walk a fine line with care considered essential in a nursing home setting?
It is. And Carmen, having been a surveyor, is kind of interesting because she's very much just let them sleep. And then we talked to the state surveyors when they were here. With doing the hospital survey, and they made it very clear, you're still responsible for, the regulations pertaining to, their skin and all that kind of thing. You're still responsible for all that, and they really stress, absolutely, make sure you're care planning. You have documentation of what they say their wishes are. Which I thought that was interesting because she was, she trained surveyors and she was much more lighthearted about it. Mm-hmm.
I thought the surveyors were still pretty excited about even the culture change stuff as long as the care planning supported.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're just letting us know it was good advice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're in favor of continuing with this approach.
Absolutely, yeah.
And does the staff seem to feel the same way about it?
They're getting there. They're getting there, especially because it hasn't caused weight loss. It hasn't caused skin breakdown, the worries that they had.
Well, I'm glad you've done this before I become a resident therapist.
I know. That's what I'm thinking.
Any questions for Brenda?
I'm fairly new. I mean, this is just in the last several months.
It's just in the last couple of years that it's really taken off, but it's kind of rumbling in the background for quite a while. But the last thing I wanted to have you do is be the last nursing home in Wyoming to do something, because it's time to get on the train.
Well,
Well, I think Brenda and her team deserve a huge shout out, because change is always hard, and navigating and managing a huge department through not just like a little bit of change, but I mean, you guys have tackled so many different areas of care and have done a tremendous job. And I've attended one meeting, was just shocked with all the things that they're discussing and all the different areas that they're making changes to. And so,
is the facility itself, is our facility laid out, you know, structurally, is it conducive to the change?
You know, it's never going to be a greenhouse. And actually, when we were building this facility, we thought about having cottages like that. And one day, one of the big reasons we did, one day we were short of staff, and I thought, what if we had four houses? How in the world would we handle this? And it just felt like it was safer to have everybody under one roof. So there's not, you know, like Carmen, I said something about having three halls. And she goes, or maybe you have three neighbors. She's still trying to get us to change the verbiage done in that. But it's actually having the private rooms is probably the biggest thing, the biggest plus.
Well, and I think that there's the last couple of months, there's been a lot more, I don't want to say behavior because you don't want to use that word.
Yeah.
Anyway. Food complaints, I don't know. Expressing themselves or whatever. Beating up, not beating up the staff or whatever. I think they're a lot better.
Yeah, they are. I think there's absolutely a direct correlation.
So in this region, Sheriff Gillette, Casper, are other nursing homes also doing this?
I knew the ones that started out, I don't know the current ones, but there was one in Cheyenne, one in Star Valley, maybe Lander, there weren't any of the ones right around here, but we do have a neighbor that used to work at Legacy, and she said that was one of her practices, it's not working with her. So I think people are taking bits and pieces of it, even if they're not joining yet.
Is there
anything
we can like advertise
it
that we're doing this? Is it on
the
website?
That's a good idea. I'd like to get a little more into it and get it figured out, but yeah, I'm sure we can do something. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Brenda. Thanks for sharing.
Well, it's time for our CEO report.
Well, I'll start with the frustrating, or sad news. So of the four grants that we had outstanding, we found out in like back-to-back days we didn't get any of them. The two grants through ARPA, we were in the recommended to fund list through the state, so the State Department of Health reviewed all the applications, they recommended we were funded, and then when it went to the committee, we were never even nominated to be funded, which is kind of frustrating because I sat on a call all day long expecting at some point we'd get funded, and then it just never came. But I did talk to Josh, who's with the Wyoming Hospital Association, and in the next budget, they are planning on putting additional funds in, and we're one of the hospitals that are, like, our grant is still alive to be funded, and so we potentially could get that, like, $1.5 million that we had originally submitted, and that was recommended for funding. That was the big thing, is there is a lot of projects out there that there's just too much money requested and not enough funds available. I'm glad we pared ours down because there were several that had kind of done what our original requests were, and they totally got shot down, and they're not even available for the even if there's more funds put in. So paring it down, scaling it back as we did, I think still gives us a shot, and hopefully, and you know, it's still got to go through legislative session and, you know, go back through the slip board and all that stuff. So there's time, but I don't think our hopes are completely shot on that one. So we'll continue to, I guess, be patient there. The good news is operationally we're generating, you know, more cash flow than we kind of had anticipated. And so that's a positive and helps right now with maybe even pulling down what we actually have to borrow at the in the end. So construction's really moving along. In the last 2 days, they poured both the clinic floor and the therapy floor, some of the exterior sidewalk stuff. So starting to see some meaningful progress there. It seems like we've kind of been at a standstill with both those additions for the last several months with the cold weather and stuff. And I think next week they're planning on starting to frame the clinic addition. So should really start seeing some real meaningful progress come the next couple of months there. The inpatient space, they're starting to do all the floor leveling and get stuff ready for floors to be put in. Ceiling tiles, I think, are supposed to go in next week. So making a lot of progress there. I think next week our cabinets, our remaining cabinets, are supposed to come in. But they're getting pretty close, like wallpaper is going up on the walls, and painter should be finished up next week. So starting to see some real meaningful progress and kind of an end coming. The next couple weeks will be pretty exciting. Maybe next board meeting we'll walk through there, and it should be at a pretty exciting spot. We rolled out our new retirement plan. We had a lot of good feedback from employees with making that change. And I was trying to count today, but I think we probably have 80 to 100 employees signed up so far, something like that. So and continue to educate the ones that are eligible to, don't miss out on your match and at least get signed up. You can talk to an advisor and move funds around, but trying to encourage people to get signed up. So but so far I think it's been a pretty positive shift. The VOA property, they did agree to our kind of counter for them to leave in that 99-year term for that to default back to the hospital district. So so Dr. Schuler signed off on that last week. And then I think all three of you actually approved the dryer purchase. So we purchased the dryer just over $11,000. And I can't remember, do you know if that came in yet?
Well, I don't know because Therese has been out.
That's true, yeah.
Last we heard that it was still supposed to be coming in.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll get that here, but appreciate you guys granting us the ability to move forward with that. One of the things that kind of brought to light, just from an operational standpoint, is we don't really have a policy at all designating anybody inside the hospital to do emergent capital purchase just for operational, like an $11,000 dryer or something like that. I'd like to try to put a policy in place, but wanted to talk to the board about what level. Both the other hospitals I've worked at has had I think Tom threw out $25,000. Alliance, I think, just moved theirs to 50 right before I left. Like some kind of an operational margin, and then anytime we would have to do something off budget like that, then it would come back to the board the following board meeting, so you guys were aware of those purchases, but it wouldn't require running around trying to get approval by board members. So is there a dollar amount that seems fair to you guys in order to do something like that? We can work on getting a policy in place for you guys to approve next month, but
I don't have a feel at all for a dollar amount that makes sense. Maybe it's a percentage of overall budget, or and I get it. I mean, anything that was done for operational efficiency to have something, I agree with that policy. And then it comes back to us the next board meeting just to show them that, in fact, something happened.
Yeah.
So there is accountability there. And so in that light, I don't know. I mean, stuff's expensive. Is $25 or does it happen at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is where that comfort level is for you, because it doesn't mean we couldn't move on something. Let's say, we'd have a piece of radiology equipment go down tomorrow. Like, I wouldn't want to wait for another month to go by before we try to get something moving to come. But you know, a lot of stuff we have service agreements and stuff like that in place too that kind of help from that overall purchase standpoint that, you know, a service rep would come in and get things moving.
I'm trying to remember what our cutoff is for capital improvement budget. And that's just to be part of the annual capital budget. Mm-hmm. It's more of an emergency spending policy. Some of the things in radiology and lab are going to be more like $100,000 or $150,000. That's, it's a lot of money, but it's not an option. It's almost an essential part of the operation. And I guess that might be part of the qualification, but it's replacing existing equipment or service and just to maintain operations.
I think something like that, I mean, if it's $50,000 or more, like, is worth the 4 phone calls I made to get a hold of 3 of you to get something moving. You know what I mean? Like, that piece, like, there's a threshold where it just makes fiduciary sense for you guys to say, like, anything at this, under this, like, you don't need to jump through those hoops, but, you know, as a board, you guys have that fiduciary responsibility. Like, at some point, it can't just, I mean, I think $100,000 would be a lot of leeway there for our budget, our size, and things like that, you know. We'd have to get it moving, but I think it, operationally, I'm fine jumping through some additional hoops to make that thing happen, too. So.
I like the idea of having some language in there that it states, you know, that it's an existing line of business, existing service, that kind of thing. I mean, so it isn't some new deal that, you know, we're reaching into products or services that we don't currently do. Because it's almost going to be a rubber stamp deal at the board level anyway. I mean, if it's an existing thing, we have to have. I mean, I don't know who. That's defined, but I like the idea that it's made, you know, like that, and sure. Whether it's 50 grand or maybe it's 50, but it was some language like that or something.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Well, I'll work on getting something drafted and up to you guys for approval next month, so. Been working on getting a contract finalized with Dr. Kinner, trying to get like all of our providers more in a consistent model. So we did all of our clinic providers and all the ones doing hospitalist work. And so this kind of matches her kind of more in line there. It also pulls back from some of the PTO time that she's had in the past. I think she's had like 20 some days. And so it's going to bring her down to 9. She'll work about the same amount of days, but it'll be different in how many paid days there are. So trying to bring a little bit of balance there. Starting in January, we're also going to move to a 7-day hospitalist week. When you look at like issues in medicine, everything, you know, really happens in the transfer of care. And so this will cut down on the transfer of care. It'll cut it in half, moving to only making that shift once a week versus twice a week. And it's a pretty common practice for hospitalist weeks to be 7 days long. It's kind of everywhere else is kind of doing that same model. And as we talked about it as a medical staff, it was something that they thought was worth trying. So she'll work about the same amount of days, but a little bit of a shift there. And then over the last couple weeks, we've had some discussion on getting some pricing for a new EMR. Dr. Richards came up with a program out of what is that one called, Lori? Again,
OCHINA.
That is
it's like OCHINA, but
yeah, that is an Epic product. So it's a company that we could piggyback back off that uses Epic. And then Cody Regionals also, they're migrating to Epic right now through Intermountain Health out of Utah, and got really good pricing there. So we're going to get pricing for both of them, just kind of see if it's worth taking a look at Epic. That's a possibility. There's just a lot of, we currently have four different systems with lab, radiology, the clinic, and the hospital all having their own. They don't all talk seamlessly, and there's all sorts of kind of problems that kind of arise through that. So wanting to find something that's affordable for us, but think for just efficiency's sake, from a staff standpoint, like we have to move something to something that's just more user-friendly. There's a lot of workarounds and a lot of manual processes that are currently taking place, and just those double checks. So, and that's all I have for the month.
So, did you figure out any long terms that you could finalize?
So we're really close. I think we got a redline version out today, and then Dennis Kirvin had a couple more comments on it that we sent off. So hopefully. We have completed drafts by the end of this week. So, and then I think I'll need to get a hold of Christy and Dr. Schuler for signatures so we can get that to them. But the terms haven't changed. They're the same as what's on the original term sheet that you guys approved. But there's been a lot of back and forth and a lot of lawyers involved on top.
It would be a much easier process.
Yeah.
Where are we on the timeline of the farm system upgrade?
Oh, like 2 to 2.5 months. They've got them. They're gonna be programming them and stuff to bring in here. And so it's sort of a deal where you just got to bring them in and set them up and put down the other ones.
So sometime in March, perhaps?
I think probably. Or February. It could be February. End of February, sometime February or March.
How long does it take them? About a week or something? That's a pretty big project.
Well, they have all the phones now. They're programming them.
So that they'll be all ready to go, so they can plug in and go. And, I mean, he sent us a book on, I don't know, it's 20 or 30 pages on how to do it, but, you know, unless you get like a little video or hands-on, it's really hard to know exactly how it's going to work. And it's going to be really different because people, like managers, can use their computer to do it, which Luke is accustomed to doing that, so he kind of understands that, but I don't think any of the rest of us have ever done it that way. So it's just going to be a different way of doing it, but hopefully it's way better.
That's crazy. Technology has come so far. I'd hardly touch my phone in Alliance. Everything I do is through an app on the phone or on my computer. So. What?
The only exception to that is sometimes cell phone service in certain parts of the building. Limited.
Yeah.
It has something to do structurally, and I don't know if that's fixable or we just haven't had the time or the budget for that.
Yeah, they make like phone boosters and stuff that you can do. It's something that might be worth looking into because, yeah, there's definitely some corners. Sometimes even my office, I won't have any service in my office, so, which is bizarre because I'm like right on the corner of the building and have like five windows in my office. You'd think it wouldn't be an issue, but.
Well, any other questions for our CEO? Hearing none, let's move on to the financial performance.
A little bright enough. That's bright enough.
We can see it better this month, too. I promise.
I checked.
Okay, so November gross patient revenue came in still under budget. A lot of that is seen on the inpatient side. Per volume was just down for the month. Other operating revenue was the funds that we received that I talked about last month, the nursing home funds. Expenses still remain under budget for November, and we finished with a gain of $130,000. Year to date, gross patient revenue still is down from where we anticipated. Deductions are under budget as well. Expenses look good. I'm not seeing anything that's really making a set difference, but we are staying under budget for expenses. And year to date, we're sitting at $145,000 gain. Looking at stats, you can see census was down. Overall, the departments look pretty good. Just those few that are slightly down, but nothing too up. Any questions on that one? This one, looking at AR, the hospital decreased by $189,000 and the clinic decreased just barely from previous months. Our days cash on hand have dropped a little bit, as we anticipated. It's at 131 days cash on hand, but that's still quite a bit that we need to spend down, so it's giving us more room on the construction project. And then account balances as of today, compared to where we were sitting in November, gone down, but really not reflecting that much. The only other one I have is the income statement, and I don't have anything to call out there that's really outstanding, unless you guys have anything that stands out to you, questions on any of it.
It was actually seeming pretty good when it's too much traffic. And that's on piercing like nothing outside of the water. Right? Particularly with all this construction going on and stuff, it really seems to be hanging in.
Yeah. Our inpatient days are, I mean, revenue wise, that's where we're seeing the decreases with inpatient days, but which kind of makes sense with the construction that's been going on, but it's not tracking or really impacting anywhere else. So.
As of the end of November, we have 6.9 million.
And the original like plan since I was here was $7 million, so we kind of hit that and still have 30 to 40 days cash we need to spend down. So.
We're still on schedule. I mean, like you indicated, you're going to stay on schedule for a couple months, by the way.
Yeah, I think it'll be hard to tell. I mean, they keep saying that they will probably really get things, you know, caught up. But I mean, we had delays over in the inpatient space, and I think timing wise, the window's going to be tight. But I think we'll be there. So, yeah.
So with the change in the accounting firm, did you get any feedback before the audit, or is it likely will be summer sometime before we hear anything about their impression of what we're doing with the budget? Or?
We have more of that information coming down the line.
That's another agenda item tonight for us to discuss.
So that would be the contract approval?
Yes.
Or
yeah.
In the interim, we have bank signature card changes, which I assume were these. Mm-hmm. And
So the only one would be probably a critical. Chris, I'm going to pull out something.
Lori's on there, yeah.
Brenda, we checked your own, probably five. I think we've already taken care of it, so I'll make this report.
Our next agenda item is a capital item approval. Now, is that what
I think that's the dryer, yeah. So probably just the formal.
And this must be a large dryer for $11,000.
Yep.
So do you hear a motion to ratify the previous approval for the $11,000 dryer purchase?
Yeah, probably. Just the formal approval that to move forward with it.
So moved.
Moved and seconded to approve the capital expenditure for the dryer. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's approved. So there are three items under contract approval. InReach Health, Casey Peterson, and NHA Connectivity Consortium. I'll let you take it away.
Okay. We talked a little bit last month about just wanting to look at either some service line expansions in areas in the hospital where I think we have opportunity to kind of grow. InReach Health is kind of a consulting company that comes in and helps us grow different areas of the hospital, particularly in the operating room. I think, you know, we've had a lot of discussion on that with you guys, and so it just needs kind of a formal approval for us to kind of move forward with that agreement, unless there's any additional questions you guys have.
So this would be doing a study or signing up for an assessment as opposed
No, this is the ongoing agreement that we've discussed.
And this is separate from the one that involves physical therapy?
Yep.
So this is the same firm that you currently have the agreement with the physical therapy that has been good?
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen the growth in therapy, so it's definitely, you know, feel like they've proven themselves in that capacity, but I've seen them work with, you know, probably 10 to 12 different hospitals and, you know, in different capacities, and they've all seen tremendous growth through the work that they're doing with them, so.
Did you say as far as payments to them, is it on a commission basis or like they get a percentage?
It's only based, yep, they only profit on any growth, so they don't, yeah, so it's, you know, there's nothing guaranteed or anything like that as part of the agreement. So,
but it also wouldn't come back and impact the budget then, unless it's in a positive manner.
Yep, exactly.
And has the physical therapy volume increased about 50 or 60%?
It's probably higher than that, because the last 2 months has been about 100% growth almost. So if you look at, like, because we budgeted for a 25% growth, I think, in therapy. And so if you look at what we budgeted, they're drastically above that. So.
So this is just an opportunity to, I guess, expand that relationship a bit into other areas.
Yeah.
And are you basically focusing on OR, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that there may be some discussion or interviews or meetings with surgeons from other areas as far as ways of creating more opportunity for in-house surgery and
Yep, that's part of the deal is just trying to figure out, like helping look at what we're currently doing and what opportunities we have to expand that.
And how much has begun already, or is this just sort of in the approval phase right now?
It's in the approval phase for us to get something started.
And that's more of a for our information as opposed to needing to ratify?
No, I think I need permission. Because of like the nature of the relationship, like I need permission, I think, to probably enter into that agreement with them. So,
what would we have to lose? I mean, I don't know. I don't see what there is as far as, I mean, would there be any ill feelings with surgeons or physicians or, you know, I guess, what is there that we would, what do we have to lose?
That would be it mostly, is like, you know, some of the relationships that we do currently have. And, but a lot of those aren't necessarily, like, mutually beneficial. Like, you know, we're not seeing a huge benefit from them, but they see benefit from the relationship with us. So that's the biggest issue, is, you know, maybe some long-term relationships that we'll ruffle feathers with. But
they don't have a lot to lose in terms of current OR revenue to go away.
Mm-hmm.
We're not making any money. Let's look at our OR being more desirable, you know, higher than you can.
I think it may provide a lot of upside for us. And I think, you know, when you look at the ability to sustain ourselves, like we have to have some of those pieces. Like when hospitals, like I know it's happened in a lot of places where a surgery center will open up and the hospital talks about like how much money they're losing now because, you know, this surgery center opened up or something like that. That's kind of where we find ourselves in now, because we're already having all that stuff taken out. So
when do we have the opportunity to reassess? You know, like, so if we go down this road and say 6 months from now, it's like it didn't pan out the way we thought, and mm-hmm. we want to change course. So do we have the flexibility to do that?
Well, I still need. So we're working on the contract right now. So I don't know what the outs and stuff are, but I think the intent would be that this would be a long term relationship that isn't it's going to take time to kind of build and develop and all those pieces. And I think to really see whether it's beneficial or not is probably like a 24 to 36 month, you know, look and should start to see evidence before that, but it's to really start to see it take off, it's going to take some time. So it's not a short play, I don't think, but more puts us on a path that I think we need to go as an organization.
How likely is it that enough that, like, Hillsworth Orthopedic could decide to open a surgical center here, which would,
I think,
take revenue from our hospital?
I mean, I think there's always a possibility, but I think things have to probably, I think Buffalo would have to grow probably quite a bit for that to be a reasonable thing. Yeah, we're so close to Gillette and Sheridan that has those, so. I mean, it's really a volume thing. That efficiency piece is where surgery centers really shine. So
not really an issue at this point?
No.
So this would be to approve establishing a contractual relationship, which doesn't really pose financial risk, but could create some ill will, perhaps, with certain specialists who have been part of the operation here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's exclusive of those. It's just changing the dynamic as far as we need to do something to keep our operating learning sustainable. either with us or you're not.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it isn't an exclusivity type thing, is it?
Yeah, so no, and it's kind of provider agnostic. It's just about helping us.
I mean, this doesn't close the doors on some urologist specialists from Casper or something. I mean, they still.
Yep.
So, what the heck?
Great. Yeah, it's a big part of it is providing our OR team additional resources to help, you know, gain a larger knowledge base and, you know, people to pick up the phone and call because their job is to help us have those answers, right? Versus like feeling like you're bothering somebody, like when they're invested in helping us grow, they're, you know, there's not quite as big of a tug. It's like, I don't know if I want to bug them again. You know what I mean? So I think it kind of tears down some of those barriers and those walls and helps us, you know, get on the right path moving forward. Mm-hmm.
Is there any advantage in purchasing OR equipment through their group? Is there some leverage?
They're not a group purchasing organization, so. Although they do have a branch that sells implants. If we would ever get into that, like, but a lot of that stuff is pretty provider specific for like what brands they want to utilize. And you worked in OR, so you know that. I mean,
would be able to like lease equipment from, or selling certain.
I think. Well, I think one of the advantages here is like helping us gain a better, bigger knowledge base. Like they've grown 50 hospitals, so like. What equipment do you start with and like what makes sense and helping us navigate those waters versus trying to guess at that, you know, it just that's the advantage of partnering with them. But you know, the equipment purchases and stuff like that would be on us to make those investments moving forward. So, but I think it gives us, there's just more comfort in that what we're doing is we're going to actually execute on, right? I think what's happened in the past is we bought equipment, we've maybe done one case with it, and then that's it. You know what I mean? So there's been this fear, as I've talked to the OR team about wanting to grow, and what's that look like is, well, if we invest in stuff, we don't know if we are going to actually use it. So.
Well, and then there's going to be a lot of resources for, like, the OR supervisor and the OR staff, you know, things that they can do, what they need, and stuff that they don't really have those resources right now. You know, you can go online and look at a book, but it's not the same as being able to call somebody or ask somebody, you know, what do we do about this, handle this, or make this work, or whatever.
The terms of this contract and their commission or percentage of growth, does that become a long-term liability? In other words, do they take 25% of our revenue from now until the end of time, and have we sort of given up a resource that could turn into a lot of money long-term?
Well, my hope is that it turns into a lot of money because that means that it's more profitable for us, right? So, and then with cost reporting, it should all be allowable cost on the cost report. So the profit share moving forward with that piece, you know, there's big dollars in the operating room for sure. So there's some of that we, you know, we're obviously giving some of that up. But I think the expertise we get and the help to grow it, you know, I've talked to Mike about what's happened with therapy, and he's like, if I stop seeing patients 10 years from now, I might know what I've learned, and we've been with them since May, you know. And so I think that's the piece, is like the amount of money we could potentially lose by the pitfalls that we don't know, you know, and the relationships that or bridges we could burn in the process without really having that support or that backup to maybe bring somebody else in to cover that gap. And I think, you know, any time you're in a business, like having win-win relationships is what truly excels people to greater heights. And if everyone's just wanting to only protect themselves, that's where you end up where we're at right now, where, you know, that's what we've been seeing with some of the providers that come in, where, you know, we're left high and dry and they're doing great. And I'd rather have create long-term relationships with a company that they win when we win, and so we mutually are benefiting by that growth. And, you know, other, so I think there's a downside almost to the other side of that, is like they're going to help protect us in the growth, and if the end result is that we'd want to cut them out in the future, well, that doesn't make us a very good partner for people to want to partner with either. You know what I mean? So having, you know, I understand the desire to want to protect our future and our future profits and stuff like that, but I think there's just so much more protection. Like the first 2 years is where it's going to, you know, either grow or completely sink. And I think we need the support and the help to make sure we're moving in the right direction over the next 24 months. And I think that's worth, you know, sharing in the future profits as well. So I think if we tried to do it ourselves, it'd take us way longer. And we might not ever get there, to be honest with you. We just don't have people in house that have really grown up a water department. So
what kind of a time frame do we commit to if we enter into this agreement?
I'm still waiting on the contract for sure, but you know, a lot of what they do is they structure it as, you know, for everything. Like Alliance is on year 13, I think, working with InReach Health, and there's not a desire, you know, to move away, or even a thought of moving away from them, because that, I mean, they've grown so much over the last several years, and it's benefited both companies, definitely. So
I agree with what you're saying. It makes sense. If it works in the manner that you're describing, you know, why would you? But on the other hand, I see there being, in any contract, they're being out on
yeah.
both sides. Not only us,
yeah.
but them.
Yeah.
So there should be some language in there.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll make sure there's some like-out language,
yeah,
but I think
some accountability thing.
Yeah.
Because you could get to the point where the service is not up to stuff anymore, and maybe there's another company that maybe you want to partner with. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
Maybe the revenue share is different. I mean, so all I'm saying is there should be some out language in there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if they're not going to want to work for us for 5 years if we're not growing either. You know what I mean? Like, they'd just be spinning their wheels. So that'll be part of the agreement. I'm not saying we don't want to protect the, you know, downside risk or something like that. But
does Curly look at the contract for us?
No? We can have him. I don't normally have them look at everything that comes through. It'd get pretty expensive in a hurry.
Yeah.
It did, so. But it's part of what I did in Alliance, is I reviewed all the contracts that came through, so I've read a fair share of them.
So we would make a motion to enter into contract negotiation. Would we then have to approve a specific contract at another time? And is that something we should review, or are we more or less deciding tonight to sign up?
That's up to you guys, I guess. I mean, we approve a lot of agreements here that don't come before the board for service agreements or things like that, you know, so I don't necessarily think the whole contract necessarily is, you know, talk through the terms with you guys and stuff like that. So,
so we're approving that you're going to move on with this contract, and that once you get the contract and if you're comfortable with the terms, then you're going to sign the contract, right? Is that what we're talking about tonight right now? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys want additional transparency or something like that for it, we can do that for sure.
Okay.
I don't see many negatives in this. I mean, as long as from due diligence standpoint, with your expertise, and as long as those outs are in that contract, I mean, I don't need to come back and look at it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Potential signing of the contract if it meets your due diligence needs and so forth.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, that contract process is approved. The next item is a Casey Peterson contract, which, to my understanding, we've already been in.
This is additional. Yeah, so this is some of the audit stuff that we wanted to discuss to kick it back. So we've had several calls with the new audit firm. One of the issues that has come up is with how certain things were audited previously, which is part of the reason why I thought we needed to move with somebody that had healthcare experience. They're currently, their assessment of our contractual adjustments is just under $2 million. Audit adjustment. Most of that comes from issues with how things were looked at and addressed in previous audits, not necessarily in last year. So they, Kurt told us, I think last week, that if we don't do anything to rectify the previous year, they could issue us an opinion on the balance sheet. But if we take all the adjustments, they don't believe that our income statement would be correct, and because of that, they couldn't issue an opinion on the income statement, which I don't think looks very good for us to have a new audit firm not be willing or able to offer an opinion on our income statement. So the fix that they've proposed is for us to use Casey Peterson to help do some an analysis and assessment and make adjustments to our last year's audit in order for the first audit with DA&E for them to be able to issue an opinion on our income statement and balance sheet. And I think it makes a lot of sense for that to be the case. So there's, a lot of adjustments. And some of it, like dollar-wise, isn't huge. So like of that almost $2 million, $1.8 million is just in how we've handled our collections. So it's not necessarily, like they're just saying, there's this huge amount that you guys are saying you should collect, and we don't believe you guys are actually going to collect that because it's already been in collections. It's been in collections for a long time, and you guys, like the percentages we had for what we expected to receive through collections was pretty low. So, or was higher than what they thought and what they've seen in other hospitals. So
that would be a balance sheet adjustment, though, not an income.
But it would hit contractual adjustments on an income statement. So it would impact the income statement. So
we need a pre-audit accounting evaluation before this firm can do the audit.
Yeah, they've pretty much completed their audit, but in order for them to make an opinion, and they, part of the reason why they don't feel like they can do it is they're so backed up right now, and so Casey Peterson has had a relationship with us in the past, the two firms work together really like all the time. When I took the job here, Kirk called and said, you guys have a great cost report prepared. I talk to him on a weekly basis. So, and since I've been here, there's just been a lot of back and forth, whether it's on our account or for our audit. And Casey Peterson ran reports for them for our audit. So, I mean, they have this long-standing relationship where they have a lot of trust in the work that each other produces. And so, but just it's a manpower thing for them to for it to be done in a timelier manner. Casey Peterson's got more manpower to shift and to help with this. Then. But there's costs associated with it. And it's more going to be an hourly rate, I think, than it's going to be them having a push, for sure.
Yeah, it kind of sounds to me like we don't have much of a choice. I mean, we have to get audited financials, and this is a cleanup from previous, and then from this point forward, maybe it should be more smooth.
Yeah. I think we've learned a lot through this process, you know, kind of all across the board, which is something Becky and I have talked about a lot, you know, leading up to them starting the audit and stuff like that, just what I'm used to audit prep wise or auditors looking at and digging into. We just weren't, like, I was pretty shocked with the discussion with our last firm. I mean, the AR stuff, the things they were looking at when it comes to the contractual adjustments and our accounts receivable, and the questions didn't even remotely match up to what I was used to. So this is one where I really assumed there'd be probably some issues with. And Becky and I have talked about it. And, you know, it's kind of been our radar to look at, but haven't had time. And then we were so close to the audit that it didn't make sense to, you know, spend, you know, 80 hours trying to get it figured out when they were going to go through that assessment ourselves. And so, but, you know, it, not only will it help clean up the audit, but I think there's going to be a lot of work in helping us ongoing, making sure that we're making these tweaks and changes and how we're analyzing our contractual adjustments and those monthly adjustments to just bring more accuracy to our monthly financial statements as well. So.
I guess I find it a little discouraging when you consider what an audit costs, that isn't part of the overall fee for doing that service. It seems to me we're getting double charged for something that wasn't particularly well done previously. I guess it may not be an extremely large bill, but our annual audit expense is about $30,000. And what do you think we're looking at? Another 10?
On the high end, probably. The amount of work they're going to do is a lot less than an overall audit. Their engagement letter is pretty specific on the areas they're looking at, and that they're not going to do material weakness looking, you know, findings or anything like that. So it's way more targeted. So I would assume it'd be quite a bit less than $10,000, I guess.
And as a public entity, you're required to do an audit, satisfy state government, or something to do with the state. Don't they already look at this and say this is okay, or no, it's not? I mean,
well, they looked at the last audit. I mean, yeah, we've been getting audits. So when we switch companies and the new firm, sounds to me like is not going to sign off on it. They won't, unless we go back and make these adjustments, because in their discovery, the previous audits have uncovered some, I guess, discrepancies or the way the accounting should have been done. Is that a good way to put it?
I mean, one of the things, like payroll liabilities, like, so this is deeper level accounting, but so you have all these, whether it's payroll taxes and stuff like that. So in order to put the funds in the proper spot, which should have been caught in every single audit, it's a $4 million adjustment. So there's just like these huge material pieces that should have been caught that weren't caught. And
this is probably going way back.
Way back. Yeah, it's not like a one-year thing. It's just like small things year after year adds up. Like this, you know, $2 million adjustment for contractual adjustments, like, or, you know, the 1.8 for collections, like, that's probably like $150,000 to $300,000 adjustment annually, but when you don't make it year after year after year with some of those processes and how we're handling things, that it adds up a lot, you know. In the last few years, it's grown even more, you know. 20 years ago, it probably was a, you know, $30,000, $50,000 thing, you know. But as high deductible plans have come out and different things, you know, changes and stuff like that, it's created this huge material deficiency there. So, I mean, I can't blame them for the stance they're taking, because we didn't hire them to audit last year's books. But when, you know, a lot of the tweaks and changes that were made to the audit report last year were at the request of this firm, at a high level, looking and saying some of your work papers are all screwed up, or the wording in your audit opinion, it like doesn't match industry standards and things like that. So I feel like they've done a lot of that stuff for us kind of on the free side previously, but, you know, they just don't have the manpower to pick up and redo. And when we contracted with them, it wasn't for last year's audit. So if anything, the additional cost really is more at the, it's kind of that cleanup piece, right? It's not going to be like an ongoing thing year after year. Like, once we get this thing clean, we should be good moving forward, or at least are moving in that direction to, you know, to have clean audits moving forward. But there's some stuff that we dug up in the meantime. So,
if it's good enough for the state, why worry? I mean, I understand that's a question that comes from not knowing anything about accounting. Well, what's our liability? Are we going to get dinged for $2 million from CMS, who says, oh, your accounting didn't measure up and we finally found this?
I think having an audit opinion that where they can't write an opinion for an income statement raises a lot of flags. I mean, from a borrowing standpoint, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what your thoughts would be, Tom, but like, if we would, let's say, need to borrow money, or you guys see our audit opinion this year, I'm sure it'd raise a ton of flags if we can't get an opinion on the income statement.
Well, it's very concerning that we, you know, contracted with a new audit firm that has a lot more expertise in hospital finance, and they won't, based on their findings, they won't even sign off on it. I mean, that's a big red flag. And I understand why. I mean, we've probably done things this way for 50 years on collections, for example, and then we get audited by local firm, you know, that signs off on it. I'm not saying anybody's done anything wrong or bad, but now that you have this more expertise, it's like, we probably need to get in the game, you know, that's what it sounds like. I mean, because we probably could disengage this company and go back to another company and get an audited thing that they apply to, you know, but is that what we want to do? I'd say no, myself. And I don't know if we could get that company.
I think that, you know, the fiduciary responsibility the board has is that those financial statements are correct, you know, and so, you know, there's definitely some additional costs there, but I would say that the dollars are well spent, not wasted by any means, and it gets it clean. Anytime you discover, it's like finding a skeleton in the closet. You find it, you can shut the door, but you know it's there. You know what I mean? At some point, you have to dig it out, you know? And so I think that's kind of what we found, is we found some skeletons in the closet. And the best thing we can do is make the right decisions to deal with it and get back to, you know, a clean slate. And
And they said they have no time. They cannot take that on. We have to go to work.
Yeah, they're slammed right now. So, you know, the other thing, especially from contractual adjustment standpoint, having Casey Peterson do an assessment helps us kind of true in. You know, it'll be two different models looking at the essentially the same set of data, and it'll give us a really accurate snapshot of how we build our model moving forward. So,
these are the pieces that I've consistently asked help for, and I have not gotten that help. So hearing them, both sides talk about how we can fix this going forward makes me feel a lot better, because I have not gotten the help that I needed with those, so that I understand them better and can handle them appropriately on our side.
And I think that's part of, like, you know, when you have a firm that doesn't have the healthcare experience, like, there's a lot of pieces, like, you learn through people catching mistakes and, like, those kind of pieces. And when no one's calling you out and everyone's kind of rubber stamping everything, you just assume everything's going good. And so, you know, there's some things that were raised that just heightened our awareness of how we're doing our monthly closes and what the piece looks like to try to get cleaner. You know, and I'd argue that we're getting, you know, I know it's kind of a weird stance for them to take, but I think we've gotten a much, much more professional product, not a lesser one, moving with DAME. And, you know, the experience that they've brought to the table, I think has been huge, and that you can probably speak to that more than I have, but it's probably been a little bit night and day experience from what you used to. So.
Absolutely.
Any other questions regarding the Casey Peterson contract? And this is not the cost report contract. This is the audit improvement contract, shall we say.
So it's essentially just looking at how the cost report adjustment was made, and then the contractual adjustments, and then some of the payroll liabilities. So it's a really narrowed scope, but it addresses the big findings that the new firm found, which gives them the comfort if we can get these things cleaned up in an updated, audited balance or trial balance from last year, that they can do an audit or a clean opinion letter for us now.
When do they expect to be complete? Is it like end of the summer or something?
Well, normally it'd be like November, December time frame, but there's been a lot of additional work that's gone into it with all these additional findings. And so anytime you move to a new firm, there's, you know, new work papers they're building. There's, you know, going to be a longer process there. But I think because of, you know, what they found with last year's audit, it's snowballed it quite a bit. So I'm hopeful, like February, we'll get something. We did file an extension with the state because our audit should be in by December, and we won't meet that deadline this year.
Are they going to come and present or no?
They're either going to come out and present, or at least they'll present in some capacity. It might be through like a Zoom call or something, but we'll definitely present. So that's part of their engagement. So.
Any other questions?
I'll make a motion that we authorize you to contract with Casey Peterson to assist in the extras in part of your life.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to do what Tom just said. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion is approved. And the third item is the NHA Connectivity Consortium.
Yeah, so there's a email I got that kind of sparked this agreement. So the Hospital Association in Nebraska had created this connectivity consortium that essentially helped cover, let's see, I printed it. The cost of like several different IT infrastructure, so internet services, buying new routers and switches, firewall and firewall services, equipment maintenance, licenses and warranty, network management maintenance. So currently we have an agreement with one company that just looks at our internet services, and they file on our behalf annually, and we get between $4,000 and $6,000 a year back on this. The reason we kind of looked at it is the scope of what qualifies under this is much broader, and so like our contract with Digitex, who provides our network services and all that stuff, could fall under this agreement. If we would work with, you know, a different provider, like all the switches we just bought for the remodel and moving our phone system over, would have fallen under this agreement. And I think it's a federal program, but 65% of the cost of those services we can get back by being a member, and then they take a portion of that savings back. That's how these companies work. And so the Nebraska Hospital Association, they said they have 25 members. By me asking the question, they're going to form a partnership with the Wyoming Hospital Association, and so they're going to, we'll kind of do a dual pack under the same, you know, kind of group of hospitals. But I'm estimating that there's going to be another, you know, I mean, even if we get that savings on the Digitex contract, it could be over $100,000 in savings a year for us. And part of the reason I bring it up is the window opens up for funding, so they go on like our same fiscal year. But in order for them to submit applications for us, we have to move here in the next couple weeks to get a contract signed with them and for them to submit on our behalf for these different pieces. So they only take a percentage of the savings we've received, so there's no downside risk to us. And then annually they do calls with us to make sure if we have construction projects coming or things like that, that we're capturing all the savings we could potentially have. So, you know, from my conversation with Lori, I think it's just a better vendor for us to work with to help us maximize the savings we could receive in that program. But.
And we can use the same one that we bought. We can just add to it. It doesn't have to be like, this is the one that we have now is already applying for the stuff for the internet for next year. So
this is not software support service that you call when you're...
No. This is money we get paid to help cover the software support people we call.
And the federal government is helping hospitals with their IT expense if you're a member of a group like this?
Well, you can do it individually, but they said that there's some things you'd like. Network support, you couldn't do that if you did it on your own. You have to be part of a consortium. There's like three things that, like for firewalls, network support, I can't remember one other one that you have to belong to a consortium to qualify for.
Will there be anything as far as affecting operations interface with you have to do this training or we have
no,
to
there isn't anything.
It's all behind the scenes.
Server.
Yeah.
No.
Does it impact the contract with Digitex at all?
No.
Other than we might get
some savings from that.
Savings. But yeah. They're not impacted.
No.
No.
There doesn't seem to be any downside to this. Will it then be the NWHA?
I don't know how they'll do that. I'm going to leave that to Mike and Josh to sort that one out.
Well, it sounds like it's been fully vetted. It would be silly not to do it. Mm-hmm.
Trying to bring you guys some slam dunk. let's take the downside risk out and let's... You know.
I make a motion to approve the contract how to move forward with the NHA, maybe W connectivity.
I'll say.
It's been moved and seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It's approved. We've been very positive in all of these considerations, I guess.
I appreciate your positivity.
Is there an executive session tonight?
I have something I want to bring up.
Okay. Well, let's resume in a few minutes after we have a motion to go into executive.
I'm going to make a motion to go into executive session.
Second.
You want me to
go into executive session?
Aye.
Go into